Page 658. We're in the middle of discussing Pigul.
Where did they all come?
Okay. We're gonna. What's so funny?
I was just wondering. I don't have my glasses. I was wondering if you started or if you have time for a real quick
question. No, we started already. We're almost done.
No. It just got yours.
Okay. The last, so at the beginning of the Parsha, the Torah says you should be holy, you shouldn't turn after idols, and the Torah now speaks about what's called pigul. Pigul and neisar. Neisar is when you eat the meat of a korban after the time that the Torah allows you to eat it. Certain sacrifices are eaten for one day and a night, certain sacrifices are allowed 2 days and a night. So the din pigul, neisar means, if you leave, eat it after the time that the Torah allows you to eat it, so then we'll soon see what the punishment is. There's also a concept called pigul. Now, pigul is two things. When the kohen who does the korban thinks you're going to eat it outside the time or outside the place, both of those thoughts invalidate the sacrifice completely. The difference is, if you eat it when it was pigul that he thought outside the time, and you eat it outside the time, so then you get chorus. Otherwise, it's just a negative commandment. So we're saying like this in Pasuk Zayin. So because the Torah says like this in Pasuk Vav, the Torah said you can eat it the day you bring it and the next day. If it's brought, left over to the third day, you have to burn it. And then he said, if a person will eat this meat on the third day, pigul, who it's considered rejected, that's what the word pigul means. It's rejected. Lo yeratze, it's not accepted. It's not accepted as a korban, and it is also, if you eat the meat, it's a punishment. Now, pasuk ches is where we're up to. If a person eats the meat after the time it's allowed, the person will get kares, kes kedesh Hashem chilo, he desecrated the sanctity of Hashem, and the person will be cut off from his nation. In other words, you get chorus. You die before you're 60 or 50, depending which opinion it is. So there's a very interesting Arachaim HaKadosh over here that asks a very simple question. Here we're talking about a sacrifice. Everything was done right, except you left over until the after the time allotted. And the Torah says, if you eat it, you get the death penalty. Not by court, Hashem kills you. Hashem makes you die earlier. Why is this, the Rechaim asks, why is this more serious than eating treifa meat? If somebody eats chazer, yeah, or treifa meat, meat and milk, you don't die. You get lashes. You get malchus. Why is it that for Neusar, when the shechita was a good shechita, everything was, the Torah says eat it in a day and a night, and you're eating it on the third day. Why should the punishment be stricter than if you eat mamish treifa meat? So Reb Chaim says like this: the holier the thing, the more impure it becomes. The holier the thing, the more impure it becomes. And therefore we find an interesting thing. A living animal, a live animal, can never become impure. A live animal can never become impure. A living person could become impure. There's Zav, there's Nida, somebody touches, a person whose tummy touches them, they become impure. Again, it doesn't make sense. An animal is not as good as a person, yet an animal who's alive can never become tummy. Even if a tummy, that body touches an animal, it doesn't become tummy. A living animal. Yet, a living Jew could become tummy. Not only that, even within people itself, the thing is, there's no tumah by a goy. A living goy, a woman, let's say, during her nida state, a goy is not tummy. There's no concept of tumah only by a Jewish living male. So the question, why? So the answer is because they're so holy, therefore, when it becomes tummy, it becomes worse. And therefore, he says like this, a korban is so holy that when you eat it incorrectly, the punishment is far greater. A regular piece of meat that's treifa and you eat it, it's not such a severe punishment. You ate something treifa, you get punished. Because it's not such a bad sin as something that was holy, Well, that's why we discussed. Where does impurity set in? Where holiness existed and it became a vacuum. That's when impurity sets in. Otherwise, impurity doesn't come in. So therefore, treifa meat cannot cause the same harm to the Jew as noiser, and therefore noiser is a bigger punishment. Okay, now the pasuk says like this.
Question?
Yeah.
Is pigul only with a kohen? Only kohen?
Pigul basically refers to the kohen who thinks at the time of the shechita or kabbalah or elocha, only the kohen thinks.
And if the kohen just thinks that he's going to eat it 3 days later, beyond the time,
it disqualifies the korban right away.
And it is karas?
Yeah.
So you could see even if just him thinking to eat it.
That's well. Last time we spoke about that, the power of thought.
And he gets karas,
right.
Which is worse than eating, consuming.
Correct. Treifa food. Correct. Okay. Now the Torah says like this in pasuk tes. Now the Torah is going into leaving gifts for the poor people in the field. And the Mefashim explain what's the connection between sacrifices, holiness in the Beis Hamikdash, and giving food, leaving the corner of your field for the poor person. And the Mefashim explain because that is part of God's sanctity. Hashem said, you want the sanctity of godliness is when you care about a Jew who is less fortunate than you are. That's connected to the Beis Hamikdash. Shem says, part of the sanctity of the Beis Hamikdash, of korbanos and sacrifices, is when you think about another Jew. And therefore, Shem says, if you're not going to be kind to another Jew, you're actually desecrating the sacrifices of the Beis Hamikdash. And the Torah says like this, uvekutzrechem es ksir artzechem, when you will reap the harvest of your land, leisechale pa'asot chalikzer, you should not complete the reaping of the corner of the field, the leket ksicha leiselaket, and do not take the gleanings of your land. I'll explain this in a second. There's a din like this. When you own a field, there's certain parts of the field the Torah says you need to give to the poor people. One is the corner of the field. You have to leave a corner of the field for the poor people. The second thing the Torah says in this pasuk is the gleanings of the field. Now what does it mean? If one or two ears of corn, let's say, fall on the floor, when you're cutting, one or two things fall on the floor, you have to leave it for the poor person. If more than two fall on the floor, then you can pick it up and take it for yourself. So that's when they're cutting the grain. If one or two grains fall on the floor, it belongs to the poor person. And here there's another interesting halacha. Normally, I have a mitzvah to give tzedakah, correct? But I can give it to the poor person I want. It's called tovah sanah. I can give it to any poor person I want. When it comes into the field, you have to leave it for any poor person that comes. You can't say, I'm going to leave the corner of the field, but I'm going to give it to my brother-in-law who's a poor man. You can't do that.
These things. One poor man can take everything?
Huh?
One poor can take everything?
If he's big and strong, yeah. Because how many Jews you're fighting with? A lot of Jews come and take. So this is, then peah means the corner of the field. Leket is if two things fall down. Now the Mefashim all ask a very interesting question. Over kutzidachem is plural. Right? Plural. And then it says, Pa'as sotcha b'loselaket, the Torah ends off singular. The Torah starts off kutzrechem, plural. And then the Torah ends off karmecha, your vineyard, or your field, loselaket, it's all singular. So my question, why does the Torah start with plural and end with singular? So the Kol Yaakov brings down a few very interesting answers. One answer is like this. That it says, he had a few very simple answers. Number one, when you cut a field, usually you have many workers. So who's cutting? A bunch of people. Whose obligation is giving? the owner of the field. That's one guy. So he says like this, b'kutz rechem, when you cut the field, meaning you have many workers, so he's speaking plural. But now that we're telling you your obligation of leaving the field, that is the balabas, that's one person. That's one answer he gives. Another answer he gives like this. A person shouldn't think that there's so many fields out there for a poor person to collect from. Why does he need to collect from my field? Let him go everywhere else. There's bigger, better fields than mine. So Torah says, even though there might be many fields out there, plural, but he needs your field also. You need to cut and leave your field for him. Another very interesting answer. He says, when the Torah speaks about giving the things for the poor people, the Torah speaks singular. To teach us, when you give tzedakah, nobody should know about it. When you're harvesting the field, it's public. Everybody should know about it. When you want to give tzedakah, the Torah speaks singular, Lashon Yachid, to teach us when you give tzedakah, nobody should know about it. Another answer he gives, where did he go? Here. Okay, that's the answers he gives. The Baal HaTorim says another interesting thing. How much is considered the corner of the field? So biblically, any amount is called the corner of the field. There's no set amount. Like, how big does the corner of the field have to be? So the Torah doesn't give any amount. The Chachamim gave a shear, an amount, a 60th of your field.
There's four corners.
You don't need to put pay on all four corners.
Only one?
One corner. But you need to, the corner needs to be a 60th of your field. You can't make it tiny. That's why if you look at the word b'kutz rechem, the Baal HaTorim says like this, u'b'kreitzer, and then chaf mem at the end. Right? Chaf mem is 20 and 40, which is 60. So the Torah is alluding to, just in the word of v'kutz rechem, that you should leave a 60th of the field as the corner of the field. And the Torah commands the person that they need to leave one corner of the field, at the end of the field, and he's not allowed to take it away. He has to give it to the poor people. And again, like we said, he doesn't even have the opportunity to give it to the poor person of his choice. He has to leave it there and have a first come, first serve.
For fruit is the same thing?
Fruit? We'll see later. No, there are other din about fruits.
Is it only Shemitah or every year?
No, every year. Shemitah not, because Shemitah you don't grow anything in the field. The whole field is free for all. Shemitah you can't plant. Whatever grows in Shemitah is for everybody equally. But Peah is, no, every year of the 6 years. You have to leave it for the poor person.
Probably.
Yeah.
Poor person allowed to go to any field and pick up fruit without permission. It's not considered stealing.
It's not stealing. The Torah says it belongs to you.
And how would a poor person know when to go?
At the harvest time. You ever read the story of Ruth? Boaz told Ruth, go there when the workers are cutting the field, be there when they're out, when they cut the field, and get take as much as you want right away. It's when they harvest the field, whatever type of field it is, in the various types of the time of the year, whenever the time of harvest is, that's when the poor people come. And trust me, the poor people knew when it was happening. They knew exactly when to go into the field. But the workers, there's a negative, I mean, the Gemara talks about that. The workers are not allowed to push them away and tell them get lost, because sometimes they would get in the way. The guy's trying to cut a field and the poor man's already
collecting
already, or in the corner of the field. So that they have to be careful.
A rabbinical student has to be the worker.
Okay, the Chinuch writes, what is the concept of the mitzvah? What is the concept of a mitzvah? By a person leaving the corner of the field for the poor people, he shows that God is a partner in the field. If Hashem is a partner in the field, then he understands that when he cuts and harvests, it's all coming from the bracha of Hashem. So basically, leaving things for the poor people is a sign that you realize that Hashem is the one that's giving you the sustenance. As the Yerushalmi uses the expression, "Maimin b'chaya elam v'zereya." They believe in the God, and then they plant. So that's what the mitzvah pay is, to show that to be a man of good heart and give to the poor people, and then they get the brachas from Hashem. Okay, and then it says like this, V'chaymachon posikud, V'chaymachon loysa eilel. You're not allowed to pick the undeveloped twigs of your vineyard. Like Rashi explains, it means single grapes that didn't form clusters yet. You also have to leave them for a poor person. And the Rambam brings down that even if the whole field is such a field that doesn't make clusters of grapes, you have to leave the whole field for the poor people. Anything, any grapes that don't become clusters, you know, group of grapes, you have to leave it for the poor people. Even if the, and the Rambam writes, even if the whole field is like that, you have to leave it for them.
So what is that person is going to lose the entire crop of the entire year?
If that's what Hashem wants, that's what Hashem wants. He got no choice. But okay, uperet karma chalei selakeit, the fallen fruit. In other words, again, one or two grapes fall, you have to leave it for the poor people. More than two grapes fall, you can keep it for yourself. La'ani v'lager tazei v'esam, you have to leave it for the poor and the ger. And this refers to the, you know, the poor gadim, because they have no family to support them, they don't always get jobs or whatever. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am God, your God. So you have to leave it for them, I am Hashem, your Hashem. And here the Gemara learns out, like we said before, this is the pasuk that the Gemara learns out, you don't have a choice to give it to anybody. There's a very interesting argument in the Gemara. There's a concept that we said before, Toivus Hanoh means, it's not mine, I have to give it to you, but I have the ability to give it to the person of my choice. Okay? And there's argument in the Gemara if that's worth money or not. To give you a simple example. A guy has to give truma to the kohen, right? You have to give truma to the kohen. But the Torah says, I can give it to the kohen of my choice. Unlike this case of the field, you have to just leave it for any poor person. I have truma, I can give truma to whoever I want. What happens if a kohen that I don't like, or I don't know, comes to my house and grabs the truma? And he says, listen, it's not yours anyway. It belongs to a kohen. I'm a kohen, I'm grabbing it. And he takes it. Okay. The din is, it's his. But there's an argument in the Gemara whether the Kohen who grabbed it has to pay the owner for the value of the enjoyment that he can give it to anybody he wants. Is that worth money or is it not worth money? And there's an argument in the Gemara if Tevas or not is money or not and how much it's worth. But the bottom line is Tevas or not for the Kohen. Tevas or not for the owner that he can give it to whoever he wants. So the question is, if the Kohen... That's what I said. The Gemara has an argument if it's value or not. But the Kohen keeps it. The only question is, does the Kohen have to pay the owner for the enjoyment of that he was able to give it to whoever he wants and now he couldn't?
And who names the price?
Bezdin. But here again, it doesn't apply. You just have to leave it for any poor person.
So what's the result of the argument?
But it's not money. It's not considered money. Okay, next pasuk doesn't apply too much to Jews. You're not allowed to steal. Now, Rashi says right away, even though in the Ten Commandments it says don't steal, but in the Ten Commandments, it's a very incorrect translation in the Ten Commandments. When it says in that, it doesn't mean don't steal. Over there it means don't kidnap. And the Gemara learns it out, and Rashi quotes it here also. Because the other things in the Ten Commandments, adultery, idolatry, all those things, are capital punishment. So when it says don't steal, it means stealing of capital punishment. Okay? Where do you have a stealing where it brings to capital punishment? If you kidnap somebody and you sell him, says in Mishpatim, V'gainiv ish mechorei, meis yumas. You have to die. By the way, you know, it's Tisha B'Av season, the season of Tisha B'Av. The 10 martyrs that were killed in the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, you know, Bekiva and those things that we speak about in Yom Kippur davening and Tisha B'Av and the Kinnis, we go through the 10 martyrs that were killed at the time of the Beis HaMikdash. It says, why were 10 tzaddikim killed? Why 10? Not 9, 8, 7, 10, 11, 12, or 10? So it says, because the brothers of Yosef, there were 10 brothers. Binyamin wasn't there, and Yosef obviously wasn't there. I mean, what did they do? They kidnapped him, and they sold him as a slave. That's why he ended up in Egypt. What did the brothers do? They kidnapped him and sold him as a slave. What does the Torah say? V'gainiv ish mechorei. If you kidnap somebody and you sell him, it's capital punishment. So many, many years later, thousands of years later, Hashem punished the 10 brothers by killing 10 tzaddikim. That was a punishment for the fact that they took Yosef, kidnapped him, and sold him as a slave. So this is so therefore Rashi says like this, when in the 10 commandments it says don't steal, it has to be a stealing that leads to capital punishment, just like idolatry, adultery, murder, all those things are capital punishment. So therefore in that Aseres HaDibros, when it says don't steal, it doesn't mean don't steal, it means don't kidnap. Here the Torah says, Lo tignavi, you're not allowed to steal. So if somebody asks you, where does it say in the Torah you're not allowed to steal, it's not in the Ten Commandments. It's in this pasuk over here, the Torah says, Lo tignavi, you're not allowed to steal. Stealing, just for the record, applies to Jew and to non-Jew. A Jew is not allowed to steal from a Jew or from a non-Jew. Any amount that you steal is called stealing. According to, there's again an argument in the Gemara, if you borrow something without permission, unless if you know for sure the guy doesn't care, you're also stealing. Even though you borrow it and put it back, but if you borrow, unless if it's a mitzvah object that we assume people like, the, you know, mitzvah should be done with their property, but if somebody steals any amount, they're transgressing the sin of stealing, whether it's Jew or Goy. It's clear in Rambam, Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, that you're not allowed to steal, not from a Jew, not from a Goy.
Right.
Yeah.
The 10 martyrs, they weren't contemporaries, were they?
They all lived at the same time, sure.
Did.
Yeah. They were buddies.
Were they guilty of the 10 brothers?
That I don't know. I have to look in the Arizal book and say that, say if I Google them and see who they were. I don't know.
If someone borrows and he doesn't pay, is...
That's the next thing. Lo yisichachashu. Yeah, but he was part of the kidnapping.
But he was not part of the selling.
He wasn't part of the selling, but still. Okay, now, the Mefarshim explained like this. Until now the Torah is speaking about the needs of the social community to take care of the poor people. Now the Torah is speaking about social welfare. You know, be honest in business. Don't steal. Don't deny falsely. Okay? Now, okay, now Ibn Ezra asks an interesting question. Again, Leitik Nevu is plural. Okay? Why are these mitzvahs plural? Tosha say, leisignif, like it says in the Ten Commandments, don't steal singular. Why over here does it say don't steal plural? So he says it comes to teach us that not only is the guy that steals guilty, but he says one who witnesses a theft and doesn't come to testify is guilty in stealing also.
And the buying.
He says one who witnesses a theft and knows that someone is withholding property and remain silent is also part of the stealing thing.
And it says
an accessory to the crime, an accomplice to the crime. All these are forbidden to the same extent. Or the Torah says, le-sechachashu, meaning, le-sechachashu is a different type of a mitzvah. Somebody gives me something to watch. I never stole it. But I deny you never gave it to, that you ever gave it to me. So in other words, it's not that I steal. I didn't steal. You gave it to me legally. But I don't give it back when the person needs it back. It's also called denying, or leisa shakru, which means simply don't lie. And here it refers to swearing falsely. But midvash shaketicha, of course, you know, you're not allowed to lie, believe it or not. You're not allowed to lie. There was a chassid of the Alter Rebbe. His name was Rebbe Rifol de Emeser. His name was Rifol. But he never lied. They called him the Emeser, the truthful one. If he came in from outside and they asked him, is it raining? He didn't say yes, because maybe it stopped. He would answer, when I was outside, it was raining. But he wouldn't say, he was very, very careful never to lie. And there's a story told, it's an unbelievable story. There was a Jew who was accused by the Russians in the Alter Rebbe's times of committing a crime, which he really didn't do. But you know, the Russians didn't take too much to get them to make somebody guilty. And the Jews begged the Russians to let this guy off. So the Russians said, the only way we will let him go, if this Rafal the emissary will testify that he's innocent. Because they trusted him so much, he was well known that he never, ever, ever said anything false. So they said, if he testifies in court that this guy is innocent, we'll let him go.
What time he was alive?
So the Jews went over to the Fold Emissar, and they said, it's Pekuach Nefesh, you know, you have to... He didn't know what to do, because he didn't know the guy was innocent. I mean, he didn't know the case. He assumed the guy was innocent. He trusted the guy that he was innocent. But he couldn't say that he was innocent. So we wouldn't have this problem. We'd go to court and say he's innocent, right? The befuddled emissary didn't know what to do. He had such a dilemma. What happened was, Hashem made him die the night before the trial. That he wouldn't have to testify something that he wasn't 100% sure that the guy was innocent, so he died the night before the trial.
So what's happening with the guy?
I don't know. That's not the point of the story. The point of the story... Huh? Okay. I'm sure he became was innocent. Let's think positive.
I thought he was from the Gemara time.
No.
200 years ago.
I said he was a Chassid Alter Rebbe. But, you know, that's the extent... He didn't want to lie to such an extent that if somebody asked him, is it raining outside, he didn't say yes. He said, when I was outside, it was raining. But this is the din le-sechachashu, you can deny. So the Mefarshim explain like this. There is an order of the psukim. The way, you know, you start sinning, and then it keeps getting worse. One sin leads to another sin, and another sin. So he says over here, the first sin is don't steal. Then you're going to come to deny. And then you're going to swear falsely. That's what happens when sin goes from sin. Okay. So it says like this. You're not allowed to swear each by me, say one, a person with his friend. You're not allowed to swear in my name falsely. Like the Aseret HaDibros. What is this different than the Ten Commandments? So Rashi says like this, in the Ten Commandments, when it says, don't swear my name, somebody would think it means only the name of Yudkei Vavkei, only the real name of Hashem. Here the Torah teaches us that any name of Hashem that a person swears is forbidden to swear oaths. False oaths, not only in monetary issues, by the way, the Halacha, as Rambam says, in any type of oath. If somebody swear they did something, then they didn't, or they will and they didn't. Any type of vow which is swearing falsely in Hashem's name is a negative commandment. And the Torah says, V'chilalta Hashem Hashem Alekecha, you will desecrate the name of God, Ani Hashem I am God. Even in English. If you use the official name of God in any language.
No, just to say in God.
No, if a person swears falsely, he says, I swear by the name of God, this and this and this, and it's false, he's desecrating this commandment. In any language, in any name whatsoever. If it's the official name of Hashem of that particular language, it's still forbidden. Yeah.
Tax returns, when you sign your name, you've got an accountant that does anything and everything, or according to the accounting law.
Answer the question.
I don't know anything and everything.
Should you have a rabbi stamp it? It's okay at the same time.
Who said you could trust a rabbi? That's the question. They're the last person to trust. Lamarche, I'll give you an example. If a Jew goes to court, so you summons to court, and they make you swear, right? But a Jew has to do it, they're not allowed to swear in court. The Jew has to tell the judge, then they're not allowed to swear, and there's called affirm. They affirm, that means I affirm a promise, so to speak, that what I'm saying is true. But you're not allowed to swear,
Just by saying I do, it means that you swear?
Yeah, because the din is, if somebody makes a vow and you say me too, it's a vow just like you have. The guy that made it.
So what do I have to say?
I affirm that what I'm saying is true.
So help me God.
Well, you can say, so help me God. God needs to help us anyway. But not in an expression, I swear to God, to tell the whole truth and everything but the truth.
The judge accepted it?
Yeah. They have to do it.
This is going back to the stealing and testifying.
But he said any false oath for any reason whatsoever.
It had nothing to do with the oath, but the stealing.
Yeah.
The government says you're supposed to pay 50%. You can write off 50% if it's a business-related meal. So you go with your friends on the assumption that no one else does it.
Don't make it difficult.
And they make...
No.
Is that stealing?
If it's illegal, it's stealing. If you... Let me ask you a question. If somebody, you go to an amusement park, and under 12 is one price. 12 and over is a different price, right? And the kid's 13, but they're a little short. Okay? So you come and you say, the kid's 11. That's lying and stealing.
But if the...
People used to ask, can you go on the airline and... can you do something false with the airlines or whatever it is, yeah? Whenever they call me, I say, let me rephrase the question. Are you allowed to cheat and lie? I said, what do you expect me to tell you, yes? If you're asking, the answer is no. You don't ask. But if you ask, is a person allowed to cheat on taxes? The answer is, if it's, yes? Who said it? I didn't ask you if everybody does. That's the answer is yes. Now, the Torah has, just like in the government, has legal loopholes. Like people ask, you have this provable bit, you give over your debts to Besdin, or you have Etter Iska to be able to take riba interest and all that. You're cheating the system. But this is the system. The system says that you could take off X amount of money for meals, business things, or whatever it is. If it's within the confines, and it's still within stretching the truth, because even the truth could be stretched a little bit, and it's still legally within the truth. So even though you're stretching it, but if it's legally allowed, then you're allowed to do it. If somebody, if you go to lunch with a friend and you discuss business, does it say in the law that 90% of the meal has to be business? No, it has to be a business lunch. It doesn't say in the law how many, minutes or what percentage of the lunch is business. So if you say one thing about business, technically, legally, it's true.
God bless your business.
But is somebody allowed to cheat? A government, is somebody allowed to cheat? A non-Jew, is somebody allowed to cheat a Jew?
Yeah.
No, you're not allowed. That's what the Torah says over here. In fact, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, you didn't learn it yet. You're not allowed to cheat your fellow. And you cannot rob him. Okay? Which again, do not cheat, meaning, as Rashi says, you can't deprive a worker of his wages. If the worker deserves certain wages, you're not allowed to deprive him. Or deceitfully holding back something that belongs to somebody else. By the way, it's interesting, in Halacha it's forbidden, sometimes you want to steal something just to tease somebody. You're not really intending to steal it. You know, you just want to hide something from them that they should go crazy and then you'll give it back to them and your mind is never intent and is never to steal. According to Halacha, it's called stealing.
Wow.
And they tell in the Sfarim, there's a lot of stories about people that, for a joke, took something, took somebody's money, and then the person really, and they wanted to give it back, but there was too many people, so they couldn't do it then, and one thing led to the next, to the next, to the next, and they never ended up giving it back. You know, but in any way whatsoever, it's biblically forbidden to even cheat temporarily, or to steal something temporarily. Even with the intention of giving it back, is biblically forbidden, Torah says. Now, the difference between what we learned before, le'sig naivu, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, and le'sigzel, don't rob and don't steal, the difference between gneiva and gzeil in Halach is as follows. Gneiva, stealing, is when you do it discreetly, quietly. Gzeila is when you do it in broad daylight. Openly. And it's Rashi really in Parshas Mishpatim, but it's from the Gemara in Bava Kamma. If you steal something, a ganeth pays double. Kefil. A gazlan, a person that does it openly in broad daylight, only pays back single, not double.
Why?
So, yeah, why? Why is it a crooked letter? Why does a ganeth pay double and a gazlan pay single? So the Gemara explains as follows. A ganeth steals quietly at night when nobody's looking. So what type of person is this, the Gemara says? He's afraid of people, but he's not afraid of God. A gazlan does it in broad daylight. He has a personality, he's not afraid of anybody. He's not afraid of people, and he's not afraid of God. That person is not as bad as a person who's afraid of people, but not of God. That guy is worse. You know, you have a personality, you just don't care about anybody. Okay, that's your personality. You don't care about God, you don't care about people. So you steal, you pay back single. You're afraid of people, and you're not afraid of Hashem. Hashem says, that's not going to go. Then you have to pay double. And that's the difference why before it says, Leisig Neivu, which is Gneva, which is when you do it discreetly, and Sigzel, what it says over here, that is, it's called in English, robbing. That's mamish worse. I mean, it's not worse, but that's done in broad daylight. So you're not allowed to cheat in business. By the way, this dinner, you're not allowed to cheat a guy or a Jew. There is one difference in halacha, by the way, which is very interesting halacha. If a guy makes a mistake, halachically, you don't have to tell him. If a Jew makes a mistake, you have to tell them. Let's say something is priced in the store for $10. And by mistake, let's say it's $15.99. Yeah? And the guy who's selling it to you didn't see $15.99. He saw $5.99. He didn't see the one. And he gives it to you for $5.99. Halachically, you don't have to tell him. It says, if you tell him, you make a Kiddush Hashem, and it's nice, and it's proper, but halachically, because you didn't steal, he sold it to you for $5.99. But if a Jew did it, you have an obligation to tell the Jew that he made a mistake, and he should charge you the full price. What?
Does it make a difference whether it's a boy working at a Jewish store, or a boy working at a boy store?
No, if the owner is a Jew, then you have to tell them, because it's the Jews.
Even if it's the boy,
yeah. But it's the Jews. Right. But even then, Halacha says the proper thing to do, even then, to give it back.
Can you steal to save a land?
Yeah. But halacha says you have to pay it back later. In other words, what happens if somebody, God forbid, is drowning and you have something that I must have and I steal it from you, take it and use it, right? So even though I was allowed to do it, but I still have to pay it back to you.
Always?
What do you mean always?
You have to pay it back.
There's two issues. There's the sin of stealing and there's a monetary issue. Okay? If I tell you, break my window. I tell you, you know what? Break my window. And you break it, you have to pay for it. I'm talking Torah law now. If I say to you, break my window and you won't have to pay for it, then you don't have to pay for it. But if I tell you, break my window, or break my whatever, gadget, yeah, and you break it, you still have to pay, because I didn't tell you you don't have to pay for it. I said you can break it, but obviously you have to pay for it. There's the monetary issue of it, and there's the criminal aspect of it. To save a life, right, the criminal aspects fall off. The Torah says, save a life, you could desecrate Torah, right? But nevertheless, the monetary thing, you did take somebody's money, and therefore you need to pay him back.
Or if it's not possible.
Because?
Well, let's say that family also was destroyed for whatever reason. Like, say you stole from somebody in order to survive because you escaped, right? So you stole from their property in order to survive until you could get someplace safe. And then you want to go back afterwards and pay them back. But they're no longer there.
And what happens if you steal from a bunch of people and you don't know who you stole from?
Okay, or that.
So there's full of gemaras about that.
So what do you do?
A pickpocketer, right? Work the crowd. And he pickpocketed, there's 1,000 people there, and he pickpocketed 20 people. Okay? Then he decided, I want to do tshuva. Okay, now go. How in the world is he going to find out? We're not talking about wallets that have IDs. Okay? He just pickpocketed. Gazel Echem Michamisha. Gemara says he stole 1 in 5 people, and he doesn't know which one he stole from.
Which one different mouth.
So sometimes you have to pay each one, if you know who they are. Sometimes it says, what happens if you stole and you don't know at all who it is? You give it money to the community for communal affairs. Because you don't know, there's nobody to. Is that you stole from 1 in 5 people that you know who it is? Stole from people that you don't even know who it is.
Finding stuff in a Rishit HaRabim?
If you find it and you're allowed to keep it, you're allowed to keep it.
But he doesn't have to.
What? That is not stealing because the cashier has that right by the owner of the store not to care about a penny. But the worker doesn't have a right because his friend comes into the store just to lower the price because it's his friend when he knows the owner is not going to do it. That you're not allowed to do.
To save a life, so a poor person that's so poor and sick, you know, can go into the house and just steal medicine. Or
save, I mean, you might get caught by Beverly Hills police.
You know, the concept. I
mean, in halacha, you're allowed to do it.
If someone takes a loan and he doesn't return it,
that's like sisachashim. That's not denying. That's you're not allowed to deny.
No, but he doesn't have the money to pay.
So you have to work out a payment plan. But there's still a chiyuv to pay. There's no bankruptcy in halacha. There's no bankruptcy in halacha. If you declare bankruptcy, you don't have to pay back debts. Such a concept does not exist in halacha.
And if this is a synagogue, as example?
No.
And he has
the synagogue stole?
No, the synagogue asks for a loan and it cannot return it.
No.
As example.
So the synagogue has to pay it back. Whoever's in charge has to pay it back, one way or another, whenever it is. But there's no bankruptcy law in halacha. Is if somebody borrows money, they need to pay it back. Somebody steals, they need to pay it back.
What? Time embezzlement.
Time embezzlement is stealing time also. This was called gezel shina. If you steal somebody's sleep,
wake him up.
You don't let somebody sleep, you know? That's called stealing sleep. Stealing is not only in money or necessarily in property. You could steal somebody's idea.
What if it's just called stealing, the boss is supposed to give a bonus. The boss stops the bonus. The employee feels that the bonus should be still given, so he uses the time to do some other work while he's at work.
It's not so simple that you're allowed to do that. You know,
between what he thinks he should give and between what he thinks he should get.
So you have to go to the Torah to decide what's right and what's wrong. But a person cannot always take the law into their own hand to make decisions of what to do or what not to do, and so on. I wanted to say something, I forgot what it was. But but in all these laws about honesty and business, and you know, there's tons and tons of laws about this. What?
There's a Mishnah
Pirkei Avos. It's not true. There's a Mishnah Pirkei Avos that says, "Ha'emer davar b'shem amrei mevi geula le'olam." If you say something over in the name of the one you heard it from, you bring redemption to the world, right? Like we learn in Esther Mordechai. In Halacha, it says, if you don't, it infringes upon the Halacha of stealing. You stole somebody else's teaching, and you made it as your own. In halacha, that's stealing. Wow. Is it halacha that would demand money? It's very possible in halacha, if it depends if it's a direct damage, indirect damage. Oh, like you have in the music world, they have all these things. A guy steals somebody else's song.
But isn't it, with regard to that, isn't it a distinction when it comes to whether it's about learning Torah or whether it's not about learning Torah, whether it's intellectual?
Over there, the Gemara is talking about learning Torah.
But when it's not about learning Torah, when it's just an idea like
it's still a din of stealing. The question is it a stealing that you could demand retribution, financial retribution? That's a different story. Like, you know, on all these tapes, you're right, it's forbidden to reproduce the tape according to the copyright laws and according to the halacha, right? What halacha are they talking about? It's a law of stealing.
You have a software that people, one guy buy and he give it to another guy to copy?
If it's legally allowed, it's allowed. If it's not legally allowed, you're not allowed to do it.
The only thing that is not copyrighted is the Torah.
Because Torah can't be copyrighted because it's too old and it's too public to have any... But you can copyright an English translation of it. You can copyright the setup of the pages. You could copyright. You can't copyright the original text.
The copies in the United States says that you're allowed to have one copy for yourself in case the first original got damaged.
But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about giving it to all your friends.
But if you give that copy to a friend, and then you may have to make another one copy.
That's called stealing.
This is wrong.
What?
It says not.
What?
Copy.
It says you're not allowed to.
Okay.
No, but I'm saying what they say, the English translation, the format of the pages. That you can't do. Uh-huh. You can't copyright Chumash. It says here not even for class. Huh? Here. In any form, photocopy, electronic media, or otherwise even for personal study group or classroom use, without written permission from the copyright holder. That's what it says at the beginning of this book. Now, it's not talking about the Chumash. The layout of the page, that's copyrighted, but not the text of the Chumash.
Let's say, for example, $25
a week, you come
only once a week. With what? Pay monthly, and you come only once a week.
You can't get the money back.
If you have to get the money back, but let's say now you want to bring a friend.
No, you can't do that. No.
If somebody else took this and put it online, okay? Now, on the online, it's not written that you're not allowed to do it.
But if you know that person that did it was not allowed to do it, you're not allowed to do it. For instance, there's a din in Shulchan Aruch. You're not allowed to buy things from a ganav. If you know a guy stole property, stolen merchandise, you're not allowed to buy it from him. Why? That's called an accomplice in the crime, because without you buying it, he wouldn't steal. So why is he stealing? Because he knows he could sell it. So by you buying it, you're helping him in the crime of stealing.
You're making give them.
Which in Suma we're going to learn the pasuk of Evilisiti Mishal, which is b'chal a whole different concept about giving bad advice and helping somebody sin and doing all those things. But anything that's cheating in business is included in these psukim. Not in the Ten Commandments, by the way. In these psukim it says you can't deceive somebody in business. You cannot cheat him by depriving his earnings that he worked. You're not allowed to steal. You're not allowed to lay salin pu'ula sachir itchad baikir. You're not, there's also an interesting thing. You're not allowed to withhold worker's wage until the morning. It means like this. Gemara says, if a guy works for you but during the day, you need to pay him at night. If the morning comes and you didn't pay him, you transgress this negative commandment. If he's a night worker, you have the whole day to pay him. If the end of the day comes and you didn't pay him, it's transgressing this sin. Now that's when workers got paid daily, obviously. Today, people get weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, whatever it is, it's a whole different story. But when the time comes to pay, you need to pay. If not, if you have the money, so to speak, especially if you have the money, you're just not paying. Now, if there's a dispute going on, it's a different story. Then sometimes a person has a right to hold the money until the dispute is settled. But he has to let the person know, I'm holding the money until the dispute is settled. But otherwise, it's all part of this cheating in any way whatsoever. So he brings down from Chayshim Mishpat. If you have a guy where you pay him weekly, you have to pay him within, let's say you're supposed to pay him Monday morning for the previous week, you have that whole day to pay him. Monday night comes and you didn't pay him, you're transgressing that sin. So whatever it is, weekly, monthly, yearly, whatever it is, the person has to pay it. Okay, by the way, this refers to dishonest weights. It refers to anything, or you sell something as new, and it's not new. You tell somebody it's brand new and it's not, it's used. That's cheating. I mean, this includes the broad spectrum and scope of all cheating in any type of business whatsoever. No matter what the business is or what the cheating is. Whether the money came to you kosher, not kosher, you know, this is all forbidden under anything that's... But I mean, these few psukim is the whole Chayshim Mishpat. You know, all the monetary laws of Torah are included in this din. Okay, let's see the next passage. Leisekal al Chedesh, you're not allowed to curse a deaf person. So the Ramban explains, obviously it means can't curse anybody. Why does the Torah say a deaf person, even though he can't even hear what you're saying? He doesn't even hear the curse, right? He's still, you're not allowed to curse him. So how much more so, the Ramban says, is the Torah meaning if the person is aware of the curse? Now, why does the Torah use the word chedesh? It's a strange thing. To teach us, this din only applies if you curse a living person. If you curse a dead person, this law doesn't apply. Because just like a deaf person is alive, the Torah is teaching us the person has to be alive to be able to chay for cursing him. If he's dead, and you're not supposed to curse anybody. But if he's dead and you curse him, you don't get the sin of cursing. But any person, whether he's deaf, not deaf, no matter what it is. No, any person. This we're only going to start today because this is a very long discussion, both in the physical sense and spiritual sense of it. Before a blind person, you're not allowed to put a stumbling block. But then the Torah concludes like this. Fear God. You know, fear God. What does this mean? Sometimes a person does something, you say, oh, I didn't mean it. You put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. And then you come along and says, oh my God, I didn't even know. The Torah says, God knows, fear God. God knows what you meant, God knows what you did, God knows. So don't play any games over here. To come along and say, I didn't mean it. God knows what you meant. The simple meaning of this pasuk is, before a blind man, you're not supposed to put a stumbling block. This din includes, and we're going to discuss it in detail next week, this din includes giving bad advice, intentionally knowing bad advice to mess somebody up. It includes helping somebody sin. You're not allowed to help somebody sin. If you help somebody sin, you're evil to sin. If na evil, you see to mission before a blind man, you're putting a stumbling block. To give you modern day examples of this, there's a lot of discussion. This is really, if the guy could do it without you, he can't do it without you, how far does it go? But there's an interesting question, halacha. If there's something which is dangerous to your health, in fact, in Shuvas, it speaks about smoking. Yeah? Smoking is dangerous to your health. If somebody asks you for a cigarette, are you allowed to give them a cigarette? Because if they're sinning by smoking because it's not healthy, are you helping them to do an aveda?
You can say that with everything. Then.
With everything that's dangerous.
That's food.
No, that's a mitzvah.
Deep fry.
Deep
fried donuts.
Huh?
Diet Coke is the worst.
No, you give.
It's all included in this negative commandment. You have to know to what extent, how dangerous, you know, whatever the story is. But it refers to spiritual and physical. In other words, spiritually hurting somebody, i.e. causing them to sin, helping them sin. And it's very, the scene next week is a lot of laws involved in what does it mean not helping somebody sin. You know, if another asks you for wine, sometimes you're allowed to give it to him, sometimes you're not allowed to give it to him. Depending on, see next week in Mitzvah Shabbat.